feels cozy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A little for me.
Thank you.
And some for you. We should get this wine company to sponsor us.
I know. Thank you, Dark Horse Rosé.
California Dry Brain Crisp.
Courtesy of Walgreens. So good. All right.
All right.
Episode 2.
Purter, She Wrote.
Yes.
This is Sunshine Lamontree.
And Dana LaCoco.
And we're going to take you on an adventure.
We are back. And if you recall from episode 1, when we read and reviewed Catnapped, a Kleptocat Mystery, we were really left wanting one thing, and that was a talking cat. And I am happy to say that the book that we read today, or I guess throughout the week, we didn't just read it today, it delivered.
It's not just one talking cat.
There are 5 talking cats.
At least.
Yes.
That we know of.
Yes. And, oh my gosh. It was good stuff.
The book we read is called Perfect Murder. Mm-hmm. That's just like Purter, but perfect. P-U-R-R-F-E-C-T.
Yeah, as well. You got it.
Yeah. Perfect Murder, and it is by Nick Saint, N-I-C.
Yeah. You know, I would say that Nick Saint is also, much like our old friend Patricia Fry, a prolific writer, having penned over 60 cozy mysteries.
But the thing is, Nick Saint isn't just a writer.
It's 2 writers.
It's a couple writers.
We think they're a husband and wife. It doesn't specify, but they're both named Nick. And I feel like it'd be really weird if siblings were...
named the same thing.
This is my son Nicholas and my daughter Nicole. So we think they're married, but they just write a ton of cozy mysteries.
Cat sleuths, middle grade, suspense, comedy...
Even some political thrillers.
Yeah.
And also one that sounds like it might be about the adventures of a family in like a fictionalized version of Dollywood called Charlene Land. So Nick Saint, man, they're doing some great work.
They're doing the Lord's work here.
Yes. They also have a wonderful orange tabby cat who is named Tommy, who I think may have served as the inspiration for the main cat in this book.
Max?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. And then just as a side note, in their bio, when they're not writing, they really enjoy Christmas-themed Hallmark movies at any time of the year.
I love it. Nothing says coziness like tuning into a Christmas-themed Hallmark movie when it's 90 degrees outside.
Yeah, that's about as cozy as you can get. So, specifically, we're going to look at Perfect Murder.
Perfect Murder. This is book 1 in the Mysteries of Max series.
Right.
So, spoiler alert for Perfect Murder. We're going to do a quick plot synopsis. So, if you plan on reading the book and don't want to be spoiled,
tune out now.
Yes.
This is your final warning.
Final warning. Go play with your cat or do something else because we're about to...
Load up your Kindle.
Yep. All right. So what the heck happens in this book?
Well, okay. So the opening summary that I have, it goes like this. He may look like your regular ginger flabby tabby, but unlike most tabbies, he can actually communicate with his human. Reporter for the Hampton Cove Gazette, Odelia Poole. Side note, when I first read that, I thought her name was Hampton Cove Gazette, Odelia Poole. And I was like, Hampton is an interesting first name.
Very interesting.
Also, that's a very long name.
Extremely long.
Max, her cat, takes a keen interest in the goings-on in their small town by snooping around with his best friends, Dooley, a not-too-bright ragamuffin, and Harriet, a gorgeous white Persian. Their regular visits to the police station, the barbershop, and the doctor's office provide them with those precious and exclusive scoops that have made Odelia the number one reporter in town.
And possibly the only reporter in town. So that is the world of the Mysteries of Max. This particular book, as the title suggests, starts with a murder, most foul, a famous author turns up dead.
In an outhouse. Which, I wonder how many outhouses Nick Saint has been into.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I can't say that I'm an expert on outhouses or that, you know, I'm a connoisseur.
Right. Yeah.
Of like.
Yeah. You're like, I'm well acquainted with outhouses, their design, their construction.
Yeah.
This one seems to purport that there was just
there's like a giant cesspool.
Right.
Beneath.
In which you can dump a body.
Like, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's how these things work. It's right. A big part of the reason I don't go camping or ever go outside.
It's fair. Or to festivals.
Right. Yeah. Never. But we start out with a body in a cesspool. Turns out it's a famous author who goes by the name of Paulo Freire.
Oh, Paulo.
And our intrepid reporter, Odelia Poole, is on the case. She's determined to crack it. But she meets some resistance from the new cop in town.
Right. Detective Chase Kingsley.
He's fresh from the big bad city of New York, having had to resign in disgrace for mysterious circumstances. And he is not pleased with a snoopy reporter interfering in his investigation.
Right. That's not how they do it in the big city.
No.
In the big city, they have, like, ethics.
Right. And also in the big city, the police commissioner isn't like, oh yeah, my niece is a reporter and I love it when she just shows up at crime scenes. In fact, I encourage it. So Odelia keeps showing up at crime scenes looking for clues. Her talking cat, Max, is also patrolling the town trying to find some information on this murder.
Right, because the detective also brought his brute of a cat, Brutus.
Yes. Spot on with that name.
Brought this bully cat into town, and Max is up against the wall,
yes,
trying to maintain his territory.
But even in the face of Brutus, Max manages to find some clues, share them with Odelia. They look like they're probably going to figure out the murder before Chase and the rest of the police department. And really, in a stunning twist, it turns out the murder was committed by a Hampton Covian.
Someone in their very midst.
Someone who they would least expect.
Right. And who the reader would least expect as well, because there's entirely no clue.
Yes.
Before the main explanation coming from the murderer.
Yes. Really comes out of nowhere.
Mm.
But they eventually end up working together to solve the mystery, and peace is returned to Hampton Cove for now.
Right. This book was pretty well received on Amazon.
It had over 70% of its reviews are 5 stars.
Right. And it had something like over 50 reviews. So it's not like 5 people,
right.
3 of them were like, great job.
2 of them were Nick Saint.
There was one review that I saw that was like, great job, Nick. Love the work you're doing. I was like, that's an aunt.
Mm-hmm.
That's an aunt. That's a family member, yes, being like, oh gosh, my niece and nephew are writing books now.
You're doing so good.
Great job. I thought it was funny.
I liked this book. However, there were some dissenters.
Some people not on board.
Some people were very much just, they were not into this.
Some people.
We've got a review from Judy A, a single star review. And she says, great, if you think a cat is a detective. Written from a cat's perspective and the owner can talk to cats to learn facts? So weird, I couldn't even read the story development.
I mean, what one person's weird treasure,
yeah,
is another person's weird garbage.
Well, so. Judy was clearly thinking it was garbage. And Anne agrees with her. 1 star. Skip it. The book started slow and stayed that way. There was just too much bathroom humor. I don't enjoy bullies. And this novel had 2.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
There's the brute Brutus.
Not very nice.
I assume Chase is the other bully.
I guess so.
Or maybe is Odelia the bully?
I'm not sure. She's kind of a maniac.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Paulo.
Oh, right.
He's the bully.
He was probably the bully.
Okay.
That's why he ends up murdered.
I mean, yeah. That should have clued us off.
Yeah.
There's one last review that I think we should bring to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
It has 3 stars. So it's a middle of the road review, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Unique idea, says Amazon customer. Very unique idea to alternate between human and cat viewpoint. However, the cat views were a bit boring. Too much butt sniffing.
Hmm. Well.
So I think we'll circle back around to butt sniffing.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that could be filed under the same bathroom humor.
Related.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch in this book. So we've got the basic premise. We know, for the most part, Nick Saint's masterwork is pretty well received. But how does it stack up in the canon of cozy cat mysteries?
Right. Is there a cozy town?
Well, I would say that Hampton Cove is cozy AF.
I have a quote here from chapter 3. It's probably the most peaceful town on the North Shore. Apart from your occasional rowdy tourist collapsing on the beach or wrapping his car around a tree, it's a pretty peaceful little town, and we like to keep it that way.
I would definitely say that Hampton Cove hits everything we need in the quaint rubric.
Right, like what?
For one, there is a main street. There is an old-timey library. The woodsy writer's lodge that happens to house the deadly outhouse. There is a vegan restaurant called No Spring Chicks.
And it's run by lesbians.
It is.
I kind of like that.
It's very charming.
Yeah.
Also, our heroine Odelia is next-door neighbors with both her parents and grandmother, which seems pretty cozy.
And I think her uncle, too.
I think so.
Yeah.
The other thing about Hampton Cove is the Poole family. Odelia, her mom, dad, uncle, and grandmother really appeared around the place.
This were the kind of place where there was, like, mob activity. They would be the family.
Yes. Her dad, town's only doctor. Her uncle, the police chief and possibly the only cop until Chase Kingsley shows up.
I think so. She's the only reporter apart from Dan Gory,
I think. The editor of the newspaper, who is described as having a kindly hobbit face and being approximately 80 years old. So soon, Odelia probably will inherit the newspaper.
Be the only reporter / editor.
True.
The only fact checker.
Ugh.
Help us all.
Help us all. This was one of, I think, the most entertaining parts of the book, probably unintentionally, is that even though Odelia is a reporter, she does not adhere to any sense of ethics or journalistic integrity.
There's no rules.
She's a maniac.
She has, like, no regard for her sources, for
'cause most of anything. Her sources are cats.
Yeah.
You know, because she can talk to her cat, Max, who tends to listen to gossip. I won't say that I have a journalism background or anything. I did work on my college newspaper for like a semester or two. But even then, there was some pretty stringent ethics we had to follow. Like, don't accept bribes and don't keep your sources anonymous.
Right. If you have a conflict of interest, maybe you shouldn't report on that thing.
Right. Or disclose it. But Odelia's like, nah. Max says in chapter 1, quote, her editor often asks her where she gets her information, but she's been diligently protecting her sources. Mwah. If word ever got out that her sources all have whiskers, a furry tail, and a propensity for licking their own genitalia, she'd probably be front page news herself.
Some of that bathroom humor for you.
Right, just getting there right.
Right the opening.
I also looked up from the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics, one of their main things they have listed, identify sources clearly. The public is entitled to as much information as possible to judge the reliability and motivations of sources. I would say, like, your talking cat that you quote anonymously for all of your stories.
Not a reliable source.
Wildly unethical.
Yeah.
However, the cats are really, you know, not the only creatures contributing to Odelia's many breaches of integrity. Her uncle, the police chief, really seems to have no qualms with giving her behind-the-scenes access to literal crime scenes.
Right. So the way that they know that it's the writer and the way they determine the writer's time of death and everything is because his laptop happened to be thrown into the
open cesspit.
The open cesspit that was the outhouse, where his body was decomposing in a pool of brown sludge.
Miraculously, the computer survives and functions, even though it sat in a
for like the better
pool.
Part of a year.
Yeah.
Is what they said.
Someone says in passing, like, oh, we just power washed it and threw it in a bag of rice to dry it out. And, you know, it works now, but
yeah.
We haven't been able to find any evidence on it yet. So naturally, Odelia is like, oh, can I take a look at that computer? That critical piece of evidence in this murder investigation?
Literally, like, the only piece of evidence apart from a slightly bent, like, fire poker.
And possibly a suitcase.
Right.
And her uncle is just like, yeah, sure.
Come on over.
Yeah, no worries.
Pick it up whenever you're ready.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, I don't know a lot about police work, but I'm pretty sure you should not let your relatives, who are journalists, just handle sensitive evidence in an active murder investigation.
Right.
I don't think that's how these things are done.
It's probably not a great idea.
No. Another time, Odelia decides to take herself to the writer's lodge and do some investigating herself. You know, she nearly falls off of the roof of the building. She's trying to, like, climb in through a window and snoop around, and handsome cop Chase Kingsley pulls up and is like, what are you doing? This is a crime scene and you shouldn't be here. And she's like, well, why are you here then? And he's kind of like, what? I'm literally a detective investigating murder.
I have the quote here.
Oh, yes. Perfect.
Okay. So she, yada yada, she climbed up onto one of the trellises from the ground floor, made her way onto the roof. She's just wondering what she'd say if anyone caught her breaking and entering. What the hell do you think you're doing up there, Miss Poole? She looked down and saw she'd been joined by none other than Detective Kingsley. He was staring up at her, his expression implacable. What are you doing here? She asked, annoyed. And how is it that wherever I go, I bump into you? Are you following me, Detective Kingsley? I asked you first, he said. Why do you insist on sticking your nose into my investigation, interviewing my witnesses, disturbing my crime scene? It's called journalism, Detective, she said. It's what reporters do. This is a crime scene, he repeated. You can't go traipsing all over this place. Well, you're doing it, she challenged, so I don't see why I can't.
Again, like, he's the detective investigating this murder, and she's just willfully like, nope.
Mm-mm. She's like, well, you're walking around here.
Yeah, and you would think that, I mean, I agree with Chase Kingsley in this case. She's a private citizen and should not be up in this crime scene. But later on, she swings by the police station and talks to her uncle, who's the police chief, and he's like, oh, shoot, honey, you should have just stopped by. I would have given you the key.
Right. Oh, did you want in there?
Oh, just, yeah, go for it.
You, like, should have thought to ask.
Put your fingerprints on everything. It's great. Do it.
Could knock over some stuff that might be vital in the investigation of this homicide.
Yeah. She does what she wants. And, I would say pretty terrible journalist.
I feel compelled to, like, report them to some department.
Yeah. Not to mention, I think one of the most egregious things, too, is that, especially in this day and age, Odelia authors fake news.
Well, and she can be bribed to write things.
Yeah. Again, from the Journalism Code of Ethics, never deliberately distort facts or context, including visual information. Yet, she talks to her dad, the doctor, who takes a shine to Chase Kingsley, despite his rough reputation, and tells Odelia, what I want you to do is write a nice little piece extolling Chase's virtues, so to speak, and spread the rumor that his dismissal was a mistake. So literally, her dad's like, oh, hey, can you just, like, print some fake stuff in the paper about how this dude is awesome?
By the way, her dad is a shitty doctor.
Terrible doctor.
So Chase goes in to the doctor's office in, like, around the middle of the book somewhere. Mm. He's like, hey, Dr. Poole, I just ran out of my prescription for my anxiety medication, my sleeping medication. Like, can you help me out? Like, I can't get to my New York doctor right now.
Yeah.
And Dr. Poole, Tex Poole, if you will.
Tex.
Tex is his name. He says, you know what? I'm going to do you a favor, Chase. I'm not going to give you a prescription. Instead, I'm going to start a new rumor. So who's
not medicine?
Yeah, not medicine.
No,
not your anxiety medication that you need because you've been through some trauma.
Right.
I'm gonna start a rumor in town.
Yep.
About how
you're a stand-up guy.
You're a stand-up guy, and
you were framed. You didn't really get kicked off the police force for misconduct.
You never molested that woman, that suspect's wife.
Right. Which is the whole backstory is that he was forced off of the NYPD for allegedly molesting a suspect's wife, but it was actually the NYPD commissioner.
And the mayor's wife.
Who, for whatever reason, the mayor's wife, the mayor of New York in this book, is Mayor Putin. And Chase Kingsley is accused of improper conduct with his wife, Malka Putin.
Malka Putin, the wife of the mayor of New York.
Yeah.
Doing it with the NYPD commissioner.
Nick Saint.
But back in the doctor's office, Dr. Poole is like, no, I'm going to fix this for you. You don't need medication, dude.
Yeah, I'll just have my star reporter daughter write a fake story about how you're actually a great dude and everyone in town will read it and believe it and then you won't have anxiety anymore.
Yeah, your anxiety will go away. Do you a hell of a lot more good than those damn pills, son, is what he says.
Text.
I mean,
you're a maniac.
The stigma that you're creating around people who need anxiety medication just hurts my heart to read.
Also, like, what the heck kind of doctor is like, oh, it's fine. Like, we'll just have my daughter print a totally unverified false story.
Yeah.
We'll run it in the local paper, and all of these dumb Hampton Cove residents will be like, seems legit.
He's cool in our book now.
Yeah, we like him. He's a great dude.
Read it in the Hampton Cove Gazette.
Yeah, by our single reporter, Odelia Poole.
Man.
So, Chase Kingsley, you know, he's kind of got a bad rap, but you can tell he's like a dude that's been wronged.
It's not hard to understand why people seem to be drawn to him.
Yeah.
Going by some of the descriptions we have here. Let's see, in the very first chapter,
yes,
Chase Kingsley is described as hunkishly handsome.
And also a dreamboat.
Just about the most handsome man.
Like an incredibly buff angel.
Let's see, he's a hunkish male. His long limbs stretched out languidly. His athletic body casually draped across a chair.
There is a lot of ink dedicated to his square jaw. It is Greek-like. He has a battering ram of a chin.
Mm-hmm.
And never had the words ruggedly handsome been a better description for any human male.
Right. Oh, I love this particular quote. Detective Kingsley was a bad, bad man. But he was also a very attractive man.
You could, you know, right there, it's fine.
It's almost like a haiku.
It is. It is almost like a haiku.
Yeah.
And it's also like, you can be morally questionable, but you're hot. So, great. I get the sense that Chase Kingsley is like a Bachelor contestant that also happens to be like their new cop in town. And, you know, he's not quite used to the way things work in Hampton Cove, namely the fact that he is one of two cops in addition to the police chief, and the police chief's niece Odelia is just at the station all the time, all up in the investigations, and everyone is like, that's just Odelia.
That's just how this small town works.
Right.
You better get used to it.
It's totally fine. By the end of the book, he seems to warm to Odelia and her quirky ways.
We start to see that turn right around when she's like, oh, he was framed. My cat found out the truth about how he was framed.
Yes.
So now I believe that he was framed.
Yes. Which brings us to an interesting point. We've talked about Odelia communicating with cats.
Yeah.
And getting all of the information from said cats.
But how?
How? Right.
Why?
How
why
can
she
talk to cats? It's because of witches.
Do you have the quote?
I believe I do. Yes. As Max tells us, Odelia belongs to that rare kind of human who can actually converse with cats. Not that she's Dr. Doolittle or something, but she comes from a long line of women with a strong affinity with the feline species. As far as I understand it, her foremothers were witches, at a time when being a witch was a surefire way of getting burned at the stake.
Luckily, they are not in Salem. They're in Hampton Cove, which is the Hamptons adjacent. I imagine that those four people were much more civilized.
Yeah.
Sipping rosé and being like, oh, you're a witch.
Right.
How neat.
Cool. Great trick. But that is all of the explanation we get.
That's literally the entirety of why she can talk to her cat. Well, not even just her cat. All cats, right?
It does seem to be all cats.
Yeah, but not dogs.
Not dogs.
Specifically, she says she tried, but not dogs. I wonder if she can talk to lions or like big cats.
I would think.
Yeah.
They should explore that.
Maybe that's the next step, the next branch out.
I would love to read a book where someone just talks to a cheetah to solve a mystery. That sounds great.
Yeah. So if anyone out there has that mystery book for us.
Yeah. Please.
Next up.
Yeah.
Hit
us up.
The Cozy Cheetahs.
We're going to read the heck out of that book. So in addition to Max, Odelia uses her witchy talents to talk to a number of other cats. I'd say the two that Max works the most closely with are also the ones that are in closest proximity to him and Odelia, as in they are neighbors, as in they are her mother and grandmother's cats, Harriet and Dooley.
Oh, Harriet.
Harriet!
She's the worst.
She sucks.
When the book opens, there are like the three musketeers, and the second Brutus walks in, Harriet's like, ciao!
Boys, bye! She's super shallow.
She's a Persian, so I think that's some comment on fancy cats.
I think so. It might be some like purebred shade that they're trying to throw right there, because Harriet has a sparkling white coat, and Brutus, the hunky new cat in town, strolls in and is like, hey, I get raw meat all the time.
Raw meat is apparently a big deal for cats.
To cats. I guess it's much better than kibble. And Harriet's like, great, I'm ditching these zeros and getting with the hero. Brutus is my cat boyfriend now.
Yeah.
Much to Dooley and Max's chagrin. Because Brutus is a huge jerk. I mean, he's named Brutus.
Undoubtedly, he is the worst.
He's just like, I'm an alpha male, I'm a cop. And they're like, wait, you can't be a cop, you're a cat. And he's like, well, my human's a cop, therefore I'm a cop. And this territory is mine. I'm gonna pee on some trees, steal your girlfriend, and generally just be a rude, mean cat.
And I love that Max and Dooley figure that the reason that he's such a jerk is because he has not been neutered.
They've jumped to that conclusion, and they're like, great, well, that's how we're gonna exact our revenge. We're gonna see to it that this cat gets neutered.
Right in the midst of their murder investigation. Right. They're like, hold on.
They're like, wait a minute. We've discovered the important thing.
And that is that this cat has balls and he shouldn't.
Yes. It is against Hampton Cove ordinance, and we're going to see to it that justice is served. Max and Dooley spend a lot of, well, really from the get-go, as soon as they realize that there's a new cop in town who's young and handsome, hunkishly handsome, Chase Kingsley, and that Odelia is a young single female, they immediately jump to the conclusion that they're going to fall in love and move in together, and Brutus will have to live in their house with them.
They assume the same thing about Malka Putin and the NYPD commissioner. They're like, oh, they're sleeping together, so they must be madly in love, and they're doing it all over the place.
Right. I don't know what it is. I mean, there's a lot of cat logic that shows up in this book, but that seems to be an endearing tenet of cat logic. If there are two humans and they seem to like each other, they're automatically in love and are going to start cohabitating just immediately. There's no other possible option. So Max and Dooley have a common enemy in Brutus, and Harriet kind of sucks for abandoning her two day one friends to just be like, oh, this guy's hot and he has meat, so bye.
There's a quirk that Brutus has where he uses really outdated slang.
He does.
He says, like, don't listen to this riffraff. Remember what I promised you, sweetie pie. Brutus calls Harriet baby cakes at one point.
It's odd. I think he refers to Max as his homie.
Yeah. Oh, I have that right here. Brutus grinned. He patted my cheek with his paw. Maxie, baby. Your human and my human are inches away from getting it on.
Gross.
I mean, is that how you measure that?
I don't know. I didn't think that. I don't know.
The moment those two lovebirds move in together, you and me gonna be brothers, bubba. We be shacking up together. We be like homies, bro. It's like, it's not only outdated, it's just kind of inappropriate.
It's sort of like, it reminds me of when you have to take HR training at work. And they try and write dialogue to be like, what's inappropriate talk for the workplace? And there's like pictures of stock photo people like, hey, homie.
Brother.
Let's drink on the job.
So, fellow youth.
Yes. Hey, fellow youths. Oh, Brutus.
The problem is he's already fixed.
He is. So Max and Julie's plan never comes to fruition. Brutus and Harriet are in love because they're both terrible and shallow. And there's really nothing to stop the sands of time, I guess.
Absolutely no resolution on that either.
No.
Like,
not in this book anyway.
The end of this book is just like Max is like, well,
guess. We'll see what happens. Okay. Tune in next time. Gosh, these cats, though. It's weird. I don't let Herschel out, but these cats are just going all over town.
Yeah. Charlie doesn't go out either.
No.
I mean, the most out he is like he looks through the window at birds and makes, like, chirping sounds.
Same. Herschel's not, like, hopping up and walking down to the police station to eavesdrop on conversations and then report back.
Should we talk about cats doing people things?
We should definitely talk about the cats doing people things. Okay. Because there were a few instances where I don't know if the author forgot that they were writing about cats or...
They were like, you're with me so far as you believe that cats can communicate with people.
Yes.
So let's just go a step further and make cats people.
Yeah. Although we will continually make jokes about how they lick their own junk and sleep 18 hours a day.
So they're
not totally people.
I mean, not people that we want to know.
No. No. Disgusting, weird people.
I can't get over that chapter that was just entirely about cats licking their own buttholes.
Yes.
It was an entire chapter devoted to poop jokes.
And this was like, you know, this book is ripe with odd pop culture references. But this entire chapter was the cats recapping the murder. And they were like, oh man, they pulled the guy's body out of a giant poop hole. And then it just went from there, like, humans are so weird with poop, they go to spas.
They put it on their faces.
I read it in that magazine, poop. And then Harriet, our cultured cat, is like, don't you mean goop?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
I mean, it's like a 4-page setup on this joke.
Turns out, though, that Gwyneth Paltrow is a local girl.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
She's not from Hampton Cove, but she's
nearby.
Hampton Cove adjacent.
Among Us? I can't say it. I'm so sorry.
I have no idea. I'm
Hampton
very
people.
Landlocked in Midwest, so I don't understand anything about that Hampton's lifestyle.
Yeah.
But it was an entire chapter.
It was a wildly...
It was...
I don't even know.
It was not good.
All right. Cats doing people things.
Yes. There is a fist bump, which I thought would be a paw bump.
You, like, can a cat even make a fist? I mean, they do their little biscuit thing.
Right.
But that's not...
Yeah, I don't know if they hold...
Is that a fist?
Yeah. But they fist bump.
Chapter 3 gave me a mock punch on the shoulder. Like, what did you do, Kat?
Right. How?
How?
Chance.
Oh, shoot. I think that's all I have. Oh, blood oath.
Oh, the blood oath. Yes.
They do. We should probably explain blood oath.
Yes. So we know that cat gossip travels basically the entire eastern seaboard.
Mm-hmm.
And in their search for the killer to help Odelia crack the case wide open, Max and Dooley come across a feral cat named Clarice, who was a witness to this murder. They bribe her into revealing what she's seen, but she's like, you're gonna have to give me the good kibbles because I literally live in a garbage can. And they're like, okay, all right, well, we'll go do
it. Fine, whatever you want. Whatever you want. Just tell us who the killer is.
And her second requirement is that they take a blood oath. So Max scratches his paw. Clarice scratches her paw. Dooley is like, wait, we're doing what? So Clarice just scratches his nose and
puts her paw on his nose, and she's like, Max, get in there.
Right. So they take a blood oath, and then after that, Clarice is like, all right, I know who killed this dude. I'm going to tell you.
Clarice's, like, language also is amazing. She's like a 1930s gangster.
Yeah.
She's like, put it there, pal.
When they first encounter her, they're like, Clarice, do you know anything about this murder? And her only word, the only thing she says is like, I didn't see nothing.
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 Nothing
I
at all.
I saw nothing.
But
blood oaths, yeah.
Yeah.
She's into that.
And when Dooley is like, oh, no, I don't want to. I don't like pain.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, for crying out loud. What are you, a cat or a mouse? Come here, you pansy-ass pussy. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, Clarice.
Girl.
Aggressive.
Dang.
It's a lot.
He doesn't want to get scratched.
No, I don't blame him.
I don't either.
Ugh. Kind-hearted Dooley.
Oh, boy.
Well, in addition to, we touched on it a little bit, namely with the entire chapter dedicated to making a goop poop joke.
Oh my god. Is it pop culture reference time?
It is pop culture reference time.
Oh.
I would say one of the,
I think we need more wine.
Oh,
too.
We need more wine for this. Yeah. Pour some more of that, because this to get kind of weird.
I don't have anything against pop culture references.
I don't either. These ones were very heavy-handed.
It was the range, too.
Yes. I don't know if this is just a unique characteristic of all Nick Saint books, or if the character of Max is particularly well-versed in cinema, but the amount of movie references was insane.
The first one is Johnny Depp in The Secret Window. Oh, he was one of those eccentric writers. The ones they make movies about with Johnny Depp in the lead. So I'm assuming it was The Secret Window.
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty explicit when he compares Brutus to Draco Malfoy.
Harry Potter's nemesis.
Yes. Max is the Harry Potter in this situation, I guess. He also compares Brutus to Bruce the Shark from that fish movie, which... Finding Nemo.
I think so.
I don't know why, you know, if you're going to go ahead and print Harry Potter, why you couldn't just print Finding Nemo.
I don't know. Dr. Doolittle happens twice.
A couple times.
Right. Yeah. When it's describing what Odelia isn't. And then also...
At one point, doesn't Chase say, like, what am I? What do you think I am? Dr. Doolittle?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
She's like, talk to your cat about his bullying.
Right. And he's like, what are you talking about?
I'll talk to my begonias next.
Yeah. I'm Chase Kingsley, manly cop.
Disgraced former detective with a chip on my shoulder.
Yes.
I don't know if this counts as pop culture, but there's definitely a reference made in poor taste to Guantanamo Bay.
It's something, but yeah, that's quite a reference.
It's Max feeling all penned in because Brutus is like, patrolling the streets now, and he's like, I'm stuck in my backyard. This must be what prisoners feel like.
Like, I don't know, Max. I'm gonna go ahead and say no.
Maybe overreacting here.
A little bit. You know, Odelia's boss is described as having a hobbit-like face.
And then there's another Lord of the Rings reference somewhere in there, too.
Oh, I missed the second one.
It's a... Oh, wow. It's from chapter 12. It's, she searched around until she located her smartphone and snatched it from the side table that held, amongst other things, a voluminous tome that appeared to be Lord of the Rings. I think it's the actress Gabby Claret. Who does that? She's reading.
We also get references to the Hot Tub Time Machine, the Trolls movie, which I think came out last year, so I feel like this is a somewhat...
This must be recent.
...recent book.
Not only the Trolls movie, but Justin Timberlake.
Yes, Justin Timberlake himself is supposed to perform in Hampton Cove to promote Trolls.
I think at the library.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Which I feel like Justin Timberlake is not the member of NSYNC that would show up to the local library. They'd be like, here's... Chris Kirkpatrick.
JC Chavez.
Yes! That's, oh my gosh.
No offense to JC.
I can't remember the other ones.
No offense to them either.
Right? But yeah, they're like, oh no, Justin Timberlake, he's gotta get to Hampton Cove.
There's Stephen King, George R. R. Martin, and J.K. Rowling in the space of like a paragraph.
Yep, all eccentric writers who did not get murdered in the Writer's Lodge outhouse.
But who might be interested in writing at a place where a writer was murdered.
True that.
Oh my god, there's an entire scene where they're just exchanging horror movie references.
Yes.
The Omen, The Good Son.
They were, I think, trying to find a good description for Brutus before they finally landed on Damien from The Omen.
Right.
Like, you are a terrifying Satan spawn.
Ain't no Garfield.
No. And actually, I think Max is explicitly described as Garfield several times. He's a large, flabby orange cat that likes to eat.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Dooley is expressly not compared to Mel Gibson from Braveheart.
Yes.
Who would shoot down this interloper without hesitation.
Yeah. Dooley is so jealous that Harriet takes a shine to Brutus, but unfortunately he's too kind-hearted and too dumb to do anything about it. So
kind-hearted and dumb.
He's no Mel Gibson in cat form.
Then, again, with the actress Gabby Claret, who's briefly a suspect in the murder.
Yes.
There's Harrison Ford, Raiders of the Lost Ark, remaking iconic movies with female leads, yes, and angry fanboys, because what is that situation?
Right. I feel like, you know, I don't know if it's a pop culture phenomenon or just a regular cultural phenomenon, but it turns out that our murder victim, the author Paulo Frey, was a shitposting 4chan troll.
Yeah, he made a lot of enemies because he was like a raging jerk.
Yes, he had like an entire cyberbully army, and he cyberbullied the lovely lesbian owners of the No Spring Chicks vegan restaurant.
Right, he hated gay people.
Yes, and he hated women, which is why he cyberbullied actress Gabby Claret,
who played the female lead in a remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
And ignited the fury of fanboys across the world who felt that Indiana Jones should be untouchable.
True. He cyberbullied the transgender child of Hampton Cove resident Rowanna Coral, who eventually killed him as revenge for her child committing suicide, which is a pretty dark turn.
It is a pretty dark turn.
A book about talking cats, but there you have it.
And there's no clue. There's no, like...
Definitely
hint.
No clue.
Like, Odelia never remembers previously writing about this suicide.
Which you think would make Hampton Cove news, considering the other news stories she writes about are like...
A rat infestation at the donut shop.
Yeah, and like a mermaid festival down at the harbor.
Milk spill at the dairy farm.
Yeah, so you think she probably would have covered something like that, but she didn't. So nobody really suspects Rowanna until like the cats find out.
Yeah.
The cat Clarice sees her dump the body in the cesspool and shares that information with Max and Dooley, and truly...
Voila, murder.
Yeah. The cats solved the murder. The humans really didn't do much here.
No. Which is not surprising considering how much Odelia bungled everything.
Yeah. She's not real great with the journalism.
No. I love... How, speaking of like Gabby Claret and some of the other suspects.
Yes.
How Odelia goes from one suspect and she goes to the mayor's office to confirm something. But the mayor is busy. The mayor of Hampton Cove, mind you.
Yes.
Not New York.
Not Mayor Putin of New York. Different mayor.
Different mayor. She goes to office and the secretary there is like, oh, the mayor's busy, and so she can't confirm the story. And she's like, well, I'm just going to believe.
Yes.
I'm just going to believe the restaurant owner that her alibi is true.
I marked that one on my list of just egregious.
You can't do that.
Breaches of ethics.
You have to follow through on checking an alibi. You're a terrible journalist.
I mean, it says verbatim in the code of ethics, take responsibility for the accuracy of your work. Verify information before releasing it. Which is not like, she probably hadn't lied. I'm gonna assume she was.
She seemed like a nice lady.
She's a nice lady. I like her restaurant. I don't think she murdered anyone.
So it's probably fine.
Probably. Moving on. Next suspect. No big deal. Odelia. How?
It's no surprise that she went to New York and like scurried back home as a failed big city writer.
True.
One internship at the New York Post, and she was like, no, I'm going home.
I'm a small town girl at heart. I really love being able to control the press with my network of cat sources.
She would be an excellent dictator.
Yes. I mean, there's a dark side to Hampton Cove because the Poole family and their cats are running this place. And everyone is just subject to their whims.
Whatever they release as news is the only information the public is going to get.
It's true, because the only other newspaper they get is the one that old Hobbit editor Dan Gorey writes himself.
It's called Dan's Paper.
Dan's Paper, yes.
Also, why does Hampton Cove, this tiny little donut shop, dairy farm, one main street...
Yes, this place, tiny hamlet.
have two, three papers?
Mm. Yeah, I forget what the other one was, if it was like a Regional Times and then the Hampton Cove Gazette and like Dan's Paper.
Dan's Paper. I hope he just prints coupons in that.
I hope so too. I feel like if your town has more newspapers than it does police officers, like it's just a recipe. It's a recipe for chaos.
Yeah.
Also because, I mean, outside of Detective Chase Kingsley, like her uncle, the police chief, is pretty ineffective. I mean, at the very end of the book, Chase and Odelia are examining the shit-encrusted laptop. they're just typing away at it.
This is how they found out he's been online trolling,
right?
They, ruining lives.
Yes, they're like, oh, Paulo Freire was a 4chan troll, and he cyberbullied Rowanna's son, who later killed himself, and she was the one that murdered him, and now she's on the run, and we better go find her. And
right, because she steals the shit laptop.
She grabs it while their backs are turned, because they just left the door to the evidence room
wide
open.
They just walked into another room. They were like, hey.
And because she is the only cleaning lady in town, she has access to the police department, the doctor's office, the writer's lodge. And she's like, I better grab this, and you know, before I skip town, because these two are really hot on my case.
But then, instead of, like, destroying it, she goes to the graveyard to bury it next to her son's
grave. Which is odd. Yeah, I don't know if I would have done that. Needless to say, Chase and Odelia are like, we gotta catch her, and the police chief is like, okay, cool, I'm just gonna hang back here.
Literally, he's like, you go on ahead, I'll wait here in case she comes back.
Right. Like,
that's...
What?
You're the only other cop.
You are backup.
You are backup. This is a murderer.
Right.
Like a confirmed murderer.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, my daughter with no train, or my niece with no training.
Yeah, you guys got this.
Go on.
You can do it. Just, you know, go for it. I believe in you.
I'm feeling a little out of breath. I'm gonna...
Yeah, I'll be back up if you need me. Call me. Otherwise, I'm just gonna be chilling here in the police station.
Yeah.
So...
I'll get the paperwork started.
I love paperwork.
Yeah.
Let me know. It's bonkers. This whole town is so crazy.
The unprofessionalism of every person in every field.
It's staggering. It's like, how? What?
Is that what happens in small towns? It's just like anarchy?
I don't know.
If your family is like the white collar professional in every situation.
Yeah. Like if we're to believe movies like Roadhouse, yes. Absolutely. That's what happens.
I kind of wish this had been the cat Cozy Mystery Roadhouse.
Oh my gosh. If someone could rewrite Roadhouse, but have like a cat that Patrick Swayze talks to. Or, like...
Would young Patrick Swayze play Detective Chase Kingsley?
Oh, wow. That could be.
Could that?
I was also thinking Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Although he's from Boston, so I don't know if he could do like a New York.
Yeah.
I'm not good at accents to begin with.
Well, let's not try.
Yeah, let's not even go there.
Let's stop before we fail.
Hard-boiled.
Yeah, like, I could see that.
I've seen some things. I've been accused of sleeping with Malka Putin, the wife of the mayor of New York.
Who would play Odelia?
See, that's a good question.
She's described as like slim and trim, with long blonde hair and eyes the color of seaweed.
Which, coincidentally, is exactly what our previous episode's heroine was described as.
Yeah.
Maybe not the seaweed part, but...
Well, she didn't live in Hampton Cove.
That's
so
true.
She was landlocked.
Landlocked Hammond, USA. Maybe just like Reese Witherspoon plays literally every single one of these heroines.
I wouldn't be surprised to learn that.
Yeah.
I don't see the chemistry between Reese Witherspoon and Mark Wahlberg.
Not even a little bit.
No.
Then again, there's not a ton of chemistry between these two.
That's true.
But by the end, they go from despising each other to, like, tolerating each other at the end. Even though their cats are like, this is it. They're getting married.
Yeah.
Like, they're in love.
They're practically, like, popping out babies right now.
They're going to have a ton of babies. We're doomed. We have to live with Brutus.
There's nothing we can do to get back against him because, you know, he's copcat.
Yeah, they really, really jumped to that conclusion. It's a bit miscellaneous, but I feel like we can't quite close out our review of this book without mentioning a minor but extremely important side character who definitely fulfills the cozy mystery requirement.
Is it Grand?
It's Grand.
It's Grand.
It's Grand.
You guys, Odelia Poole's grandmother.
Oh my God. This.
First of all, she is like a sassy septuagenarian.
She's in her 70s. She is the cat mom to Dooley. She's also Odelia's neighbor. And she is rude as hell. This old lady, who is the receptionist at Odelia's father's medical practice.
But also an assistant at Odelia's mother's library.
Yes. Again, so, the pools just run Hampton Cove.
Yeah.
This old lady is rude AF, and I am here for it.
So, in chapter 7, Odelia goes to the doctor's office, the doctor, her dad, and she's asking whether she can talk to the cleaning lady, Rowana. And Grant says, the woman is batty. Why do you think she's batty? Odelia asked after a pause. Grant sometimes had a habit of judging people too harshly and being very vocal about it. Because she keeps singing to herself, that's why. I caught her at it a couple of times. She leaned closer, but still spoke loud enough so that everyone in the waiting room could hear. She sings to herself and wiggles that enormous butt of hers while she works. Can you believe it? I'm telling you, the woman is batty. Either you work or you shake your ass. You can't do both unless you're an exotic dancer. And trust me. No one is going to pay money to watch Rowana Coral strip and hug a pole.
Grandma.
Grandma.
Grandma, you are savage.
You can't say that so that everyone can hear
it. That is so rude. She's a maniac. Also, the Pools decide to have Chase Kingsley over for dinner.
Because of course they do.
Because, yeah, I mean, he's the police chief is...
The uncle,
so naturally...
The doctor already knows him, because he's the dad.
He probably went to a library, so he knows Odelia's mom. And they're like, oh, we'll just have you over. You're literally the newest person in town. But, holy smokes, Grandma is thirsty.
She is thirsty.
She lays eyes on Chase Kingsley and is like...
Tell me about
wow,
it.
Wow, wow, wow. Captain Beefcake.
Captain Hottie Beefcake.
Captain Hottie Beefcake. But you know what? Grandma's like, hey, I might be 50 years older than you, and you're the same age as my granddaughter, Odelia, but I am not gonna even let you consider her as a prospect. Let me tell you about her crazy ex-boyfriend.
Oh my God. Gran is the worst wingman ever.
She's not a good wingman.
She's like, let me tear down my granddaughter.
She's like, I don't care about grandchildren. Like,
I'm here to get laid.
I'm here for Gran.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about how Odelia dated a crooked cop. Oh, and then her other boyfriend was an embezzler and, like, went on the run after stealing a bunch of money from the Hampton Cove Bank.
She has terrible taste in men.
She's awful. And Odelia's like, Grandma, stop.
I'm right here. You're embarrassing me.
And then Grandma's just like, Chase, do you have a license for these guns? Squeezes the biceps. She's...
Oh, hold on, though. Yeah. Gran introduces herself.
Oh, my God.
Gran is not a pool, per se.
No.
Her name is Muffin. Vesta Muffin. She's a widow, you know? So if you invited her over for dinner, nobody in town would talk.
OMG.
She's laying it on thick with Chase.
Vesta Muffin, you are a beast.
She's like, she's got like a stick of butter. She's rubbing him down.
She's just, yeah, she's like, oh my gosh, let me squeeze your biceps. Do you work out?
Are you a meat eater? Yeah. I don't even know how that's sexy, but it is.
I guess. Maybe she's like, oh, your muscles obviously show that you need protein and eat it. Ugh.
Grandma.
I hope there's more grandma in these books.
Miss Muffin.
Miss Muffin.
Yeah.
I wrote a note. Is she a witch? Can she talk to cats?
I don't know. I don't know if Odelia's mother can talk to cats. Like, can all the women in the family?
Yeah, because...
Her dad can't.
Because the grandma is her maternal grandmother, right? Like, it's her mom's mom? The point is...
Yeah, no, you're right, because...
I think at least three other women in this book should be able to speak to cats, but it appears that Odelia is the only one that has that gift.
She's special.
I think the hijinks would only be compounded if Grandma Vesta Muffin could talk to her cat, Dooley. I mean...
He's sweet and so dumb.
So dumb.
And Gran is so savage.
Also, I'm sure if Gran talked to Brutus, he would shape right up. She'd be like, I'll neuter you again. I'm Vesta Muffin and I'm a beast. Like,
oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah. So, what are your final thoughts on Perfect Murder?
I would say that it is a vast improvement over the first book we read.
Agreed.
We asked for talking cats. We got them in spades.
Yes.
The bathroom humor, I gotta agree with whatever Amazon reviewer was like, I don't know about that.
It was a bit excessive.
A bit excessive. The butthole licking.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little much. I would say that this definitely adhered to the cozy mystery formula.
Absolutely.
We had a very, very quaint town. We had a plucky heroine who was kind of a maniac.
I mean, but maybe that's what they're supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on your definition of pluck, I guess. some light romance.
Right.
Outside of the murder and the descriptions of cyberbullying, not too much terror or violence.
I would say, like, mild terror.
And we had, as you mentioned, a ton of talking cats. So I think it's a cozy cat mystery. This book has everything you could possibly want.
Yeah.
And it's one in, I believe, a series of six. So wouldn't be opposed to reading another Mystery of Max at some point in the future.
As long as you're not deterred by, like, utter unprofessionalism, then you should be able to dive right into this.
Yes. If you can accept that the job descriptions are basically written, you know, sort of as, like, how a child pretending to be a reporter would write them, then you'll have a good time with this book.
A police chief who doesn't care about policing.
Yeah. It adds to the charm.
It certainly does. I kind of wish the Poole family was like the mob.
At this point, they're pretty close.
Yeah. I do wish that Grandma Muffin spoke to her cat, Dooley.
If Grandma Muffin can speak to her cat, Dooley, in the sequels.
In fact, Nick Saint, if you're listening to this, I would like an offshoot.
If Grandma Muffin gets her own spinoff with Dooley.
And it's just like Seinfeld.
Hey, if Chase and Odelia go on their eventual honeymoon and it's up to Grandma Vesta Muffin to go solve some mysteries, I am here for that.
Smokes, am I here for that.
Yes. Take my 99 cents.
Well.
Oh, I guess we could talk about some minor updates. The fact that we now have an official website.
Yes.
PerderSheWrote.com. You can find us in the iTunes store.
That's right. Search Perder, P-U-R-R-D-E-R, and She Wrote.
Please leave us a rating or review if you enjoyed the podcast.
And subscribe.
Yes. Also, if you feel like following us on the social media platform of your choice, we are on Twitter at PerderSheWrote, Instagram also at PerderSheWrote, and on Facebook at PerderSheWrote as well.
Yeah, we claimed all the domains.
We were on top of that. And it seems like we might be the only cozy cat mystery review podcast in the game, so go us!
Go us. Way to find a niche. Yes. Audience.
And thank you, audience, for joining us.
We love you.
You're the best.
You are the best. We're going to finish this bottle of rosé in your honor.
Shine on, you crazy diamonds.
Love you, kittens.
Bye.